This podcast contains explicit content, is of graphic nature, and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
We want to state that this is a fun hobby for us and is not only about true crime.
When we go off topic, that portion of the show may not contain facts or research.
Because we are having a good time.
We hope you enjoy our spin on the topics we discuss.
Welcome to the Two Girls True Crime Podcast.
This is Katie.
And this is Courtney.
Just two girls talking murder, true crime, lore, and other phenomena.
Jefferson County 911.
Yes, I am a teacher at Columbine High School. There is a student here with a gun. He has shot out a window. I believe one student
I've been Columbine High School.
I don't know what's in my shoulder. If it was just a last beat through it.
Okay, has anybody been injured, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And the school is in a panic, and I'm in the library. I've got students down under the table, kids! Heads under the table! Kids are screaming. Some of the teachers are, you know, trying to take control, and we need police here.
Okay, we're getting them there. Who is the student, ma'am?
I do not know who the student is.
Okay.
I saw a student outside. I was in hold of a gun. Okay. I was on hold and I saw a gun. I said, what's going on out there? And he said, oh, it's probably for video production. It's probably a joke. I said, well, I don't think that's a good idea. And I went walking out. Guys, I couldn't even dance. See what was going on. He turned the gun straight at us and shot. And my God, the window went out. And the kid standing there with me, I think he got hit.
Okay.
Something in my shoulder.
Okay. We've got help on the way, ma'am.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Stay in the line of them.
Oh, God. Okay, just stay down.
Do we know where he's at?
I'm sorry?
Do we know where he's at?
Okay. I'm in the library. He's upstairs. He's right outside of here.
He's outside?
He's outside of this hall.
Outside of a hall or outside?
In the hall. Outside,
okay.
Sorry. There are alarms and things going off. Now, smoke. My God, smoke is like coming into this room. Okay.
Okay.
I've got the kids under the table here. I don't know what's happening in the rest
okay.
of the building. Most of them smoke in the building. I don't know. I'm sure someone has to be calling 911 to fight.
Yes, we've got a lot of people on. Okay. I just want you to stay in the line with me. We need to know what's going on.
Okay.
Okay?
I am on the floor.
Okay. And you've
okay,
got the kids
in the
there.
Library, and I've got every student in this library on the floor. You better stay on the floor.
Is there any way you can lock the doors?
Smoke is coming in from out there, and I'm a little
okay.
The gun is right outside the library door. Okay? I don't think I'm going to go out there.
Okay. You're at Columbine High School?
I got three children.
Okay. We got it.
Okay? I'm not going to go to the door to shut the door, okay? I've got the kids on the floor. I got all the kids in the library on the floor.
We have paramedics, we have fire, and we have police on route, okay, sir?
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
I can't believe he's not out of bullets. He just keeps shooting and shooting and shooting.
Okay, yeah, we've got a police officer on scene.
I thought it was...
Okay, just try and keep the kids in the library calm.
Yeah.
Is there any way you can block the door so no one can get in?
I do not.
Okay.
I guess I can try to go, but I mean, like, he's right outside that door. I'm afraid to go to the...
That's okay.
That's where he is. I'm afraid
okay.
to go there. Okay?
That's okay.
Okay, I told the kids to get on the floor. I had them get under the table. All of the children are on the floor under the table. Yeah, they're all under the table.
Okay.
And
as long as we can just try and keep...
No one's saying a word.
Okay, as long as we can keep everyone there as calm as we can.
I hear some yelling out there going on right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we've got alarms going off now as well.
Yeah, there's alarms. This room is filled with smoke.
Okay.
Okay.
Keep everyone low to the floor.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's up. Everyone stay on the floor. Stay on the floor. Stay under the table.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, I know just...
I don't know. I didn't... I said, what is that kid got? He was outside at the time. And I was on call duty. Who the hell got? He's crying. He's like, woo-hoo-hoo!
Mm-hmm. I know.
The things that are getting shot off. I do not know who the student was. I don't even think I saw him. He's wearing black. He didn't look very large. May Yale student. He was out there shooting. It looked like he was climbing out shooting. And somebody, I said, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
I said, what's going on? He said, this is a cat gun. It's probably for video production. You know, they have these video
productions.
And the kids, I said, well, that's not, you know, a play gun, a real gun. I was going out there to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, well, oh, my God, that was really close. That just rattled me.
Okay. What's your name, ma'am?
My name is Patty.
Patty?
Yelling everybody get up right now. Please tell the library. Please tell everybody get up right now.
Okay.
Please don't hold on. Oh, I have him in the library shooting at students with a lady that I have in the library on the phone.
Okay, try and keep as many people down as you can. Okay. Do you know who he is? Okay.
That was intense.
That was the Columbine High School Massacre, which was a school shooting that occurred on April 20th, 1999 at Columbine High School in Columbine, which is an unincorporated area of Jefferson County in the American state of Colorado. In addition to the shootings, a complex and highly planned attack involved a firebomb to divert firefighters, propane tanks converted to bombs placed in the cafeteria, 99 explosive devices, and car bombs. The perpetrators, senior students Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, murdered 12 students and one teacher. They injured another 21 additional people, and three more were injured while attempting to escape the school. The pair committed suicide.
Although their motives remain unclear, the personal journals of the perpetrators document that they wished their actions to rival the Oklahoma City bombing and other deadly incidents in the United States in the 1990s. The attack has been referred to as a suicidal attack that was planned as a grand, if badly implemented, terrorist bombing. The massacre has been reported as the deadliest high school shooting in U.S. history.
The massacre sparked debate over gun control laws, high school cliques, subcultures, and bullying. It resulted in an increased emphasis on school security with zero tolerance policies and a moral panic over goth culture, gun culture, social outcasts, even though the perpetrators were not outcasts, which is a huge rumor. They were actually the bullies. The use of pharmaceutical antidepressants by teenagers, teenage internet use, and violence in video games.
In 1996, Eric Harris created a private website on America Online, also known to us older people here, AOL. Harris initially created the site to host gaming levels he and his friend Dylan Klebold created for use in the video game Doom, primarily for friends. On this site, Harris began a blog which included jokes and short journal entries with thoughts on parents, school, and friends. By the end of the year, the site contained instructions on how to cause mischief, as well as instructions on how to make explosives, and blogs in which he described the trouble he and Klebold were causing. Beginning in early 1997, the blog postings began to show the first signs of Harris's ever-growing anger against society. Harris's site attracted few visitors and caused no concern until March of 1998. Klebold gave the web address to Brooks Brown, a former friend of Harris. Brown's mother had filed numerous complaints with the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office concerning Harris, as she thought he was dangerous. Rightfully so.
The website contained numerous death threats directed against Brown. Klebold knew that if Brooks assessed the address, he would discover the content and inform his parents, and likely the authorities would be notified. After Brown's parents viewed the site, they contacted the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office. The investigator, Michael Guerra, was told about the website. When he accessed it, Guerra discovered numerous violent threats against the students and teachers of Columbine High School. Other material included blurbs that Harris had written about his general hatred of society and his desire to kill those who annoyed him. Harris had noted on this site that he had been making pipe bombs, in addition to a hit list of individuals. He did not post any plan on how he intended to attack targets, as Harris had posted on his website that he possessed explosives. On January 30, 1998, Harris and Klebold stole tools and other equipment from a van parked near the city of Littleton. Both youths were arrested and subsequently attended a joint court hearing where they pleaded guilty to the felony theft.
So if there was the mom of Brooks Brown. If the mother of Brooks Brown had reports to the police in 1998 and all of this stuff was online, I don't understand how he wasn't automatically red flagged in the system.
I don't either, especially since they had shown violent tendencies previously.
And it shows plans.
Yeah.
How to make things, make mischief. Yeah, death threats right there. That's an arrest. If you did a death threat against me, you would be a terrorist attack threat.
Well, nowadays.
Yeah. In one scheduled meeting with his appointed psychiatrist, Harris had complained of depression, anger, and suicidal thoughts. As a result, he was prescribed the antidepressant Zoloft. He complained of feeling restless and having trouble concentrating. In April, his doctor switched him to Luvox, a similar antidepressant drug. And this was something that the court-appointed psychiatrist from the arrest in 1998. Harris and Klebold both began keeping journals soon after their 1998 arrests. In these journals, the pair documented their arsenal with videotapes they kept secret. Wouldn't mind seeing those.
I think those are what they call the basement tapes, yeah. Is that correct?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Their journals documented their plan for a major bombing to rival that of the Oklahoma City bombing. Their entries contain blurbs about ways to escape to Mexico, hijacking an aircraft at Denver International Airport and crashing it into a building in New York City, foreshadowing the September 11 attacks by 2 years.
Wow.
And details about the planned attack. The pair hoped that after
detonating.
Thank you. The pair hoped that after detonating their homemade explosives in the cafeteria, the busiest time of the day, killing hundreds of students, they would shoot survivors fleeing from the school. Then as police vehicles, ambulances, fire trucks, and reporters came to the school, bombs set in the boys' cars would detonate, killing these emergency and other personnel. That did not happen since these explosives did not detonate.
The pair kept videos that documented the explosives, ammunition, and weapons they had obtained illegally. They revealed the ways they hid their arsenals in their homes, as well as how they deceived their parents about their activities. The pair shot videos of doing target practice in nearby foothills, as well as areas of the high school they planned to attack. On April 20th, approximately 30 minutes before the attack, they made a final video saying goodbye and apologizing to their friends and family. In the months prior to the attacks, Harris and Klebold acquired 2 9mm firearms and 2 12-gauge shotguns. Their friend, Robin Anderson, had inadvertently bought a rifle and the 2 shotguns used in the massacre at the Tanner Gun Show in December of 1998. Though, through Philip Duran, another friend, Harris and Klebold later bought a handgun from Mark Main for $500. Using instructions obtained via the internet, Harris and Klebold constructed a total of 99 improvised explosive devices of various designs and sizes. They sawed the barrels and butts off their shotguns to make them easier to conceal. On the day of the massacre, Harris was equipped with a 12-gauge Savage Springfield 67H pump-action shotgun, which he discharged a total of 25 times, and a Highpoint 9.95 carbine 9mm carbine with 13 10-round magazines, which he fired a total of 96 times.
Klebold was equipped with a 9x19mm Intratec Tech 9 semi-automatic handgun with 1.52, 1.32, and 1 28-round magazine, and a 12-gauge Stevens 311D double-barreled sawed-off shotgun. Klebold primarily fired the Tech 9 handgun for a total of 55 times, while he discharged a total of 12 rounds from his double-barreled shotgun. That's a little bit overkill. I mean, that's out of control. They wanted everybody to die. They didn't care about anyone.
No.
No, I mean, not even themselves.
This was their end game.
And, you know, from what I remember, Klebold, Dylan wanted to die. He didn't want to kill people.
No, he was very suicidal.
Went along with it for the option to be killed.
And he looked up to this Eric, and Eric, they say, was diagnosed a psychopath. He really was an actual psychopath.
And remember one of our previous episodes, we talked about psychopaths and how they're smart.
Right.
And it showed that Eric was smart, and it showed that
they can manipulate,
and, you know, he can be charismatic, he can tell people what they want to hear.
Yep.
You know, nobody really knew, and he was bored.
Yeah.
He was bored with everything, you know.
They were both obsessed with the movie Natural Born Killers.
Oh, yeah.
And they would refer to the 420 event as NBK.
That's right. That's right. Also,
they wore black trench coats to hide their weapons and to look cool.
And then I remember this happening, and I remember everybody that wore a black trench coat in school started to get bullied.
Oh, well, not to mention we were terrified of them.
Well, they were bullied because of these guys.
Yeah.
And I think it's because
people were scared. It gave them a bad rap.
People were scared, so their reaction, I think, was to bully them.
Yeah.
So that maybe they felt like the bigger person, and I don't know. But
you shouldn't
bully someone who you think is going to kill who you think has a gun under your trench coat.
But then part of me also wonders, because I don't recall the trench coats before this happened. I don't recall them wearing them. It was almost like they did it for extra attention.
I think they wore them before, but nobody noticed. Nobody knew who these guys were.
That could be very possible.
You know, they were the quiet ones that were emo.
One even had long hair, just like that Eric Harris.
Ponytail one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. And then there was the heavy set one with, like, the medium hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure those guys were nice. I mean, I don't know. I don't know them. But then I think after this, they did kind of like the extra attention because they walked, you know, how they walked all.
Yeah.
Not down tough, the halls, but like
they knew what they were doing.
Katie. Yeah.
They knew what they were doing.
It's so interesting to see how these like emo goth kids
can be influenced changed. By
they changed this from incident. Being quiet and reserved to coming out of the hallways more.
And you know what's really interesting is all the kids that were in high school at this time, they're our age. They're like our exact age. So this happened at the exact time. We were the same exact age as them. It just really hits
home. Well, they were a few years older than us, because it was 99.
Well, yeah, you were in high school already. Mm-hmm. I was graduating 8th grade, but still, I mean,
same age group.
30 to 35 now is about the age group.
Yeah.
And they said that Eric was the mastermind behind the attack, and he tried to approach other friends to join him before he found Dylan, who was suicidal, depressed, felt unworthy, and so he gave in.
Well, and also with him, Eric, he noticed that they were like, no. And so he played it off like, yeah, I was just joking, man, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. So he knew when he found the right one.
Yep.
And that was Dylan.
Dylan Klebold.
So, let's see. On the morning of Tuesday, April 20th, 1999, Harris and Klebold placed a small firebomb in a field about 3 miles south of Columbine High School and 2 miles south of the fire station, set to explode at 11:14 a.m. The bomb was intended as a diversion to draw firefighters and emergency personnel away from the school. It partially detonated and caused a small fire, which was quickly extinguished by the fire department.
At 11:10 a.m., Harris and Claybald arrived separately at Columbine High School. Harris packed his vehicle in the junior... Harris parked his vehicle in the junior student parking lot by the south entrance, and Claybald parked in the adjoining senior student parking lot by the west entrance. The school cafeteria, their primary bomb target, with its long outside window, wall, and ground level doors, was between their parking spots. After parking their vehicles, each containing concealed bombs, timed to detonate at 12 o'clock exactly. The duo met near Harris's car and armed two 20-pound propane bombs before entering the cafeteria a few minutes prior to the beginning of the A lunch shift. The youths placed the duffel bags containing the bombs set to explode at approximately 11:17 a.m. inside the cafeteria before returning to their separate vehicles to await the explosion and shoot survivors fleeing the building. Had these bombs exploded with full power, they would have killed or severely wounded all 488 students in the cafeteria and possibly collapsed the ceiling, dropping part of the library into the cafeteria. A Jefferson County Sheriff's Deputy, Neil Gardner, was assigned to the high school as a full-time uniformed and armed school resource officer. Gardner usually ate lunch with students in the cafeteria, but not on April 20th. He was eating lunch in his patrol car at the northwest corner of the campus, watching the students in the smoker's pit in Clement Park.
Now, some people might even think that this part of it goes along with a lot of those conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's like, okay.
Every day.
Except for that day.
Every day you're in the cafeteria. The security staff at the Columbine did not observe the bombs being placed in the cafeteria since a custodian was replacing the school security videotape as it happened. What are the
odds
of that?
That's another thing about a conspiracy. Like,
I agree.
Okay.
The bags holding the bombs were first visible on the fresh security tape, but they were not identified as suspicious items. No witness recalled seeing the duffel bags being added to the 400 or so backpacks already in the cafeteria.
I mean, the planning of this was just...
I wonder how long they actually planned this for.
A long time. Wasn't it 2 years?
I don't know.
As the two youths returned to their vehicles, Harris encountered Brooks Brown, a friend and classmate with whom he had recently patched up a long-standing series of disagreements. Brown, who was in the parking lot smoking a cigarette, was surprised to see Harris, whom he had earlier noted had been absent from an important class test. Harris seemed unconcerned, reminded of this fact by Brown, commenting, "It doesn't matter anymore." Harris then elaborated, "Brooks, I like you now. Get out of here. Go home." Brown, feeling uneasy, walked away. Several minutes later, students departing Columbine for their lunch break observed Brown heading down South Pierce Street away from the school. Meanwhile, Harris and Claybald armed themselves by their vehicles and waited for the bombs to explode. When the cafeteria bombs failed to explode, Harris and Claybald convened and walked toward the school. Both armed, they climbed to the top of the outdoor west entrance steps, placing them on a level with the athletic fields west of the building and the library inside the west entrance, directly above the cafeteria. From this vantage point, the cafeteria's west entrance was located at the bottom of the staircase next to the senior parking lot.
At 11:19 a.m., the two gunmen pulled their guns from beneath their trench coats and began shooting. Injuries and death in this initial incident include Rachel Scott, age 17, killed by shots to the head, torso, and leg alongside the west entrance of the school. Richard Casaldo, age 17, shot in the arm, chest, back, and abdomen alongside the west entrance to the school.
Daniel Robro, age 15, fatally injured by shots to the abdomen and leg on the west staircase, shot through the upper chest and the base of the same staircase. Sean Graves, age 15, shot in the back, foot, and abdomen on the west staircase.
Lance Kirkland, age 16, critically injured by shots to the leg, neck, and jaw on the west staircase. Michael Johnson, age 15, shot in the face, arm, and leg to the west of the staircase.
Mark Taylor, age 16, shot in the chest, arms, and leg to the west of the staircase. Anne Marie Hotchalter, age 17, shot in the chest, arm, abdomen, back, and left leg near the cafeteria's entrance. Brian Anderson, age 17, injured near the west entrance by flying glass.
Patty Nielsen, age 35, hit in the shoulder by shrapnel near the west entrance. Stephanie Munson, age 17, shot in the ankle inside the north hallway.
William David Sanders, age 47, died of blood loss after being shot in the neck and back inside the south hallway.
As the shooting unfolded, Patty Nielsen talked on the phone with emergency services, telling her story and urging students to take cover beneath desks. According to transcripts, her call was received by a 911 operator at 11:25 a.m. The time between the call being answered and the shooters entering the library was 4 minutes and 10 seconds. Before entering, the shooters threw two bombs into the cafeteria, both of which exploded. They then drew another bomb into the library hallway. It exploded and damaged several lockers. At 11:29, Harris and Claybold entered the library, where a total of 52 students, two teachers, and two librarians had concealed themselves. Harris yelled,
"Get up!"
so loudly that he can be heard on Patty Nielsen's 911 recording at 11:29. Staff and students hiding in the library exterior rooms later said that they also heard the gunman say, "All jocks, stand up. We'll get the guys in white hats." Wearing a white baseball cap at Columbine was a tradition among sports team members, typically jocks. When no one stood up in response, Harris said, "Fine, I'll just start shooting anyway." He fired his shotgun twice at a desk, not knowing that a student named Evan Todd was hiding beneath it. Todd was hit by wood splinters but was not seriously injured.
The shooters walked to the opposite side of the library to two rows of computers. Todd hid behind the administrative counter. Kyle Velasquez, 16, was sitting at the north row of computers. Police later said he had not hidden underneath the desk when Klebold and Harris had first entered the library, but had curled up under the computer table. Klebold shot and killed Velasquez, hitting him in the head and back. Klebold and Harris put down their ammunition, filled duffel bags at the south or lower row of the computers, and reloaded their weapons. They walked back toward the windows facing the outside staircase. Noticing police evacuating students outside the school, Harris said, "Let's go kill some cops." He and Klebold began to shoot out the windows in the direction of the police. Officers returned fire, and Harris and Klebold retreated from the windows. No one was injured. Injuries and deaths in the library
include Evan Todd, age 15, sustained minor injuries from the splintering of a desk he was hiding under. Kyle Velasquez, age 16, killed by gunshot wounds to the head and back.
Patrick Ireland, age 17, shot in the head and foot. Daniel Steepleton, age 17, shot in the thigh.
Makai Hall, age 18, shot in the knee. Stephen Curnow, age 14, killed by a shot to the neck.
Casey Rugsager, age 17, shot in the shoulder, hand, and neck. Cassie Bernal, age 17, killed by a gunshot wound to the head.
Isaiah Scholes, age 18, killed by a shot to the chest. Matthew Ketcher, age 16, killed by a shot to the chest.
Lisa Kruetz, age 18, shot in the shoulder, hand, arms, and thigh. Valine Schnurr, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, age 18, injured with wounds to the chest, arms, and abdomen.
Mark Kinkin, age 17, shot in the head and shoulder. Lauren Townsend, age 18, killed by multiple gunshot wounds to the head, chest, and lower body.
Nicole Nolan, age 16, shot in the abdomen. John Tomlin, age 16, killed by multiple shots to the head and neck.
Kelly Fleming, age 16, killed by a gunshot wound to the back. Gianna Park, age 18, shot in the knee, shoulder, and foot.
Daniel Mauser, age 15, killed by a single shot to the face. Jennifer Doyle, age 17, shot in the hand, leg, and shoulder.
Austin Eubanks, age 17, shot in the hand and knee. Corey D. Pooter, age 17, killed by shots to the chest and neck.
We would like to have a couple of thoughts for all of the victims here in the attacks, and we do want all of the victims to be remembered, and that's why we wanted to make sure we said all of their names, their ages, and how they died or how they were injured, because they are truly victims in this.
The two walked out of the library at 11:36 a.m., ending the hostage situation there. Cautiously fearing the shooter's return, 34 uninjured and 10 injured survivors began to evacuate the building through the north door, which led to the sidewalk adjacent to the west entrance. Casey Rubzegger was evacuated from the library by Craig Scott. Had she not been evacuated at this point, she would likely have bled to death from her injuries. Patrick Ireland, unconscious, and Lisa Kreutz, unable to move, remained in the building. Patty Nielsen joined Brian Anderson and the three library staff in the exterior break room into which Klebold had earlier fired shots. They locked themselves in and remained there until they were freed at approximately 3:30 p.m. After leaving the library, Harris and Klebold entered the science area, where they threw a small firebomb into an empty storage closet. It caused a fire which was put out by a teacher hidden in an adjacent room. The duo proceeded toward the south hallway, where they shot into an empty science room. At approximately 11:44 a.m., Harris and Klebold were captured on the school security cameras as they re-entered the cafeteria. The recordings show Harris kneeling on the landing and firing a single shot toward one of the propane bombs he and Klebold had earlier left in the cafeteria, in an unsuccessful attempt to detonate it. He took a sip from one of the drinks left behind as Klebold approached the propane bomb and examined it. Klebold lit a Molotov cocktail and threw it at the propane bomb. As the two left the cafeteria, the Molotov cocktail exploded, partially detonating one of the propane bombs at 11:46 a.m. 2 minutes later, approximately 1 gallon of fuel ignited in the same vicinity, causing a fire that was extinguished by the fire sprinklers.
And that's why they have fire sprinklers.
That's right.
After leaving the cafeteria, the duo returned to the main, north, and south hallways of the school, shooting aimlessly. Harris and Klebold walked through the south hallway into the main office before returning to the north hallway. On several occasions, the pair looked through the windows of classroom doors, making eye contact with students hidden inside, but neither Harris nor Klebold tried to enter any of the rooms. They even reloaded their firearms close by the room that Dave Sanders was in. After leaving the main office, Harris and Klebold walked toward the bathroom, where they taunted students hidden inside, making such comments as, "We know you're in there," and "Let's kill anyone we find in here." Neither attempted to enter the bathroom. At 11:55 a.m., the two returned to the cafeteria, where they briefly entered the school kitchen. They returned up the staircase and into the south hallway at 11:58 a.m. At 12:02 p.m., Harris and Klebold re-entered the library, which was empty of surveying students except the unconscious Patrick Ireland and the injured Lisa Kreutz. Once inside, they shot through the west windows at police, who returned fire. No individual was injured in this exchange.
At approximately 12:08, 32 minutes after they left the library, Patty Nielsen overheard Harris and Klebold suddenly shout, 1, 2, 3, in unison, just before a loud boom. Dylan and Eric died next to each other. Both had committed suicide, Harris by firing his shotgun through the roof of his mouth and Klebold by shooting himself in the left temple with his Tech 9 semi-automatic handgun.
We're ending this episode with Dylan's mom, Sue Klebold, in an interview with Diane Sawyer on 2020.
For the families of 13 people who died and 24 people who were injured, most of them children.
Yes.
What is it you want to say to them?
The one thing, of course, that I want to say is I am so sorry for what my son did. Yet I know that just saying I'm sorry is such an inadequate response to all this suffering. There is never a day that goes by where I don't think of the people that Dylan harmed. And I
use the word harm.
Harmed. I think it's easier for me to say harmed than killed. And it's still hard for me.
Holly,
Miss Haven,
signing on.